Welcome to Cyber Therapy. My name's Ashley Lee. I am Senior Marketing Manager here at Jupiter One. And here is my lovely co-host,
Tony Ramirez.
Woo!
The one, the only.
Round of applause.
Yes. Yes.
We are so glad that you're here. If this is your first time joining the show, we are literally just kicking off season two. We started with at the first of the month with just me and Tony. And today we've got a great guest for you. And this season's going to be really all about getting to know people, the relationships that they build within their organizations, how they're able to improve teamwork, communication, because those are the things that make things run, processes run well at organizations, especially when there's a lot of change. So I think today we wanted to kickstart the conversation with a poll that we started last episode, which was, is it more important to start with your technical knowledge and then learn how to communicate it well? Or do you start with learning how to communicate well and then pick up the technical knowledge along the way? And the results that I got were probably more indicative of my connections and my network, but it was like 55-45 split with comms first, then technical in the lead. So what do you think, Tony?
How would you interpret that? Let me start off by saying this. When I first saw your poll, I was like, well, I asked that question. And then, but jokes aside, I looked at it and I didn't know how to answer. I put technical first and then I slept on it. And I woke up the next morning. I'm like, I changed my mind. I'm putting communication first. And it sounds...
Why?
You know, I started thinking about kind of going back to school and understanding, like, I had a teacher who was big on having people present information that they were working on. And once a week, he would have people come up and explain what they were working on because they were eventually going to have to do a whole presentation on it. I also had once to take a class at one of the, like, Chicago's Illinois law schools, and like, if you've ever been in a law class, you know, you've always seen the movies where they point at somebody at random and they're like, tell me about this thing. And if you know it but can't communicate it, you kind of like lose points. And it got me to thinking, yeah, communication is key. I know your answer was 100% obvious to me. But,
well, I think it's changed over time for me, which I think I said on the last episode. I don't remember. But I, like, when I started in marketing operations, I was like, I got to learn, like, how these integrations work and how the data flows and what's important to, like, different people who are using the information. So it's very much like understanding the technical setup and architecture of whatever tools we were putting into our MarTech stack. And then... as I tried to talk to people about why is it important to get this other tool or why is it important to do it this way, I found myself struggling to communicate the value. It was just like in my head, it was like, it just makes sense this way. But the reality is, like, we have to work with so many people. And so you have to be able to communicate it in a way that makes sense to other people to bring people along on the journey.
I agree. Right? I think I originally thought, like, you know, early career, it makes sense to get super technical and, like, you know, like, in, like, initiate yourself with the information, make it a part of you. But then I started thinking about, most of the time we have this dream that we're going to talk to somebody and they're going to be like, yeah, but that's only true if they're an expert. Like, I think, again, if we did a TLDR of what we spoke about last time, it was... communicating effectively is important, but the value of the information is all that ultimately matters to the general populace. So,
and how you share it.
I think it's a ping pong. That's my answer.
Yeah, I think it depends on the context and who you're talking to, right? Like, if you're trying to work with other technical people to set up something, it's probably best to be technically sound. Right. And be able to communicate in the same language that everybody else is using. But if you're trying to communicate to a mass audience and trying to get more people on board, right, within, you know, new wave of security culture, security awareness, getting people on board to adopt more secure practices, You got to use language that people can understand and not get sucked into the nitty gritty of the tech. So, all right. Yep. So enough about that topic. Let's see. The other topic that I wanted to ask that I thought was really interesting is personality tests. So in today's episode, we're not going to be talking about scaling a team. We're going to be talking about product security, and we will be bringing our guest on in just a minute. But Tony, have you taken any personality tests?
Funny enough, I have. A friend told me I have to take this personality test. And when, looking back at it, I remember telling you, who cares? And then I finally went around, I took the result, I took one of those tests, I think it was like Myers-Briggs or something, and I was like, oh, this is really interesting. Yeah, the 16 personalities.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what you were?
And I don't remember what I was, which might tell you about my personality type.
But I actually do remember what you were. It popped into my head as we were starting this. You really? Are the debater.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't that just fit?
Yeah, it does. I'm not going to debate you on that.
Okay. All right. Well, I have also taken it. I am an ISFJ in the Myers-Briggs, which I think that one is the defender on the 16 personalities test. So, on that note, let's go ahead and bring our guest on because I'm curious to know what his personality test is. So we'll go ahead and bring on Michael Roberts. He is the manager of product security at Abbott, and we are so glad that you're here. Hello.
Hey. Awesome. Glad to be here.
So have you taken a personality test? Have you taken the Myers-Briggs?
I have taken the Myers-Briggs, yeah. I was an ENTJ commander, I think was the name for it.
Wow, you're literally the opposite of me in almost every single one except the J.
No. Am I more similar to Tony at least?
Yeah. I mean, I think the debater is like a extrovert too, right? Mm-hmm. I remember you being an E. I don't remember what the actual breakdown of the debater was. I just remember the debater name. So cool. I just think it's so fascinating to find people's personalities and how they mesh, because then I can read up on an ENTJ to know your weaknesses as well as your strengths.
Worst strengths.
So very cool. Well, we're so glad that you're here, Michael. Thank you for taking the time to join us on our show. And I guess for the people on the line, as well as myself, because I'm curious about this too, can you explain what product security is? Because I'm not sure. How is it different from like product management, product security, application security? Like there's a lot of different terms out there. So curious to know how you define it.
Yeah. I don't know if I have a clear definition for, product security off the top of my head. But in general, it is, working to make, products that your, group develops more secure, starting with, from the very beginning of the process, design, development of those products, working to integrate security into all aspects of that. I think it may go a bit beyond application security in that you're not just focused, purely on the application. You're also focused on sometimes the infrastructure that runs it, or the policies, that go into making it, or, the build process for that particular product. So it kind of spans the full life cycle of the, device versus, maybe a more scoped application security group.
That's cool. Awesome. Very interesting. Yeah, because I've definitely seen product security titles from like a lot of companies who do like IoT, like they have devices that they need to secure and they sell.
Yeah, I see it a lot in like a lot of industries. I think not to say like application security titles are going away, but I think product security is kind of the new hotness. Not even so new, but just .
Yeah, I just think it's
go ahead. I was just saying, I'm glad. I'll take it. I'll take the on the rice.
How did you get to your role?
Yeah, I'm curious too, Michael, because like you've got an interesting background. Like I remember when we first met, I was like, oh, you've kind of like you've changed roles a couple times since we've met, and you know, mm-hmm. you've kind of had a cool path.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Let's see. So I can go into my background a little bit more of how I kind of got into security, and then you know my initial role mm-hmm. and kind of how that's evolved. So I initially, I guess, found out about you know the security industry via an interesting mechanism. I was in high school and found out about cybersecurity competitions. So there's like a competitive environment where teams from different schools go against each other trying to defend a network or environment or a particular host, and found out about those and was really interested in them. Back to the personality test question in the like Gallup Strengths Finder assessment, my number one strength is competition. So I really like competition, and that was really interesting to me. And then as soon as I turned 18, I started working full-time in security, and then went and got my bachelor's and then eventually master's, and I've stayed in the field.
Very cool. Were you like, did you go into like offensive security, or were you security engineer? Or like where did you start your path? I'm more asking just because I don't know how do you get into product security, right? Are there different paths in, or did you have to be technical, right?
Yeah, I think there's different paths in, but yeah, you definitely have to have a technical background, just application security and some of the other things I mentioned in product security earlier are quite technical. I think you do have to have that base layer of knowledge. I have done a variety of offensive and defensive roles. I did some like pen testing consulting, some internal like red team pen testing work as well. But I've really enjoyed the defensive side of things. I really enjoy taking something from the inside and finding out more about it and working on making it more secure. So in my current organization, I started as a security engineer working on leading a few efforts related to just improved security of a particular product, and then grew into leading all of the technical security areas for that product, and then have grown into recruiting and hiring and helping grow people and managing those people, and just kept kind of growing that responsibility.
That's so cool. Was this something that you like sought out on your own, or were there other people who were like, hey, you seemed like a good fit, like you want to step into this role and start managing a team? Or was it like for you, like because you had the drive to like climb the ladder?
Yeah, a mix of both. I think in previous organizations, I've had people notice that I'd make a good leader, or I took particular initiative in a certain area, or had some of the soft skills necessary to do that role. Here, it was some of that, some of me showing ability to do that, and experience leading different initiatives, and then also me wanting that role, me trying to grow my own skills and get better at some of those areas that were needed. So I'd say a mix of both.
Let me ask you this, because it you went from being somebody who was actively maybe like a doer who was testing these things and then managing people who were doing those things. Mm-hmm. And that's a weird transition. What do you recommend to somebody who's going through that?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, it's definitely a weird transition. Just the idea of not doing it yourself, not doing the tasks yourself. It really, the first thing most people would say would be like the importance of delegation. So, I mean, that is what I would recommend to a new manager learning to delegate effectively. It requires kind of moving towards like giving off a task, but still, you know, overseeing the completion of it to kind of a more mature model of like completely letting, you know, somebody else own a particular task or a particular area. And that's kind of a hard transition to do, especially if you think, you know, you can do that task yourself, you know, immediately or quicker or better or whatever the case may be. It's definitely hard.
Is there any like particular mantra or motto or like mindset that you have to like remind yourself of when you're like, oh, I can do this so much better, but I really should delegate? Like, what helps you get over that hump to just let go?
I mean, the easiest answer is hire people smarter than you, and then I can't do it better. But for sure, like, just have to remember that, you know, if you want to scale your team, you know, more effectively or scale your responsibilities, you know, one person doesn't scale as much as you can do with enabling a number of people. So yeah, just remembering that, I think.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think in our pre-call you were saying how, you know, when you got acquired, right? You were originally supporting one product, securing one product, and now you've had to grow to a much bigger portfolio. So obviously you can't hire like 10 people at a time. You've had to like justify adding more headcount over time, right? So take us a little bit through the journey of like, what were the first things that you wanted to accomplish for the first few people on your team? What were kind of some of the things that you looked for in like their personality or their strengths and as you started to build out your team?
Yeah, I think anybody that I've been able to hire at, you know, either our current organization or previous ones, I've been looking for both a technical skills fit, as well as some of the soft skills that were mentioned along with the survey that you guys did after the previous show. So, like being able to communicate effectively to, you know, different audiences, or really, you know, being able to learn and, you know, teach yourself new skills, technical or soft skills or whatever it may be. So I think, you know, looking for people that are, you know, able to learn and have a deep experience in whatever you're trying to hire them for. And then I think one thing that is often overlooked either, you know, with hiring new people or, you know, trying to grow out a team, I think, you often overlook the importance of people being in the right role. So like Gallup again has this model of like kind of an organizational leadership that like people should be in a role where they're doing, you know, what they do best every day. They say that leads like 14% increased profitability for the organization if everybody's in, you know, a role where they do it best. So just because somebody has, you know, technical skills in one area, you really should have them work in an area that they do best, instead of, you know, trying to let's see, just fit people into like odd positions and stuff like that.
So was there, so early on in your team building, then did your earlier team members have to cover more skills and more areas of expertise, or how did you, how did you do that?
For sure. Yeah. So kind of my thought process there was just something I've had to learn more of, like somebody that say may have a deep, you know, technical expertise. At the time I, you know, really need them to complete, you know, a particular task, or, you know, I think, you know, it's, you know, something that they could do. Like, I think you have to realize as a manager, also what the other person does best and what they want to do, in order to, you know, be able to keep them long-term and able them to see growth. So I think it's more something a manager needs to learn, just the importance of people really like focusing on what they do best, not anything.
Not just the tasks at hand that need to get done.
That's interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, you have a like, I really like your team, because I think I've met all of them now, and every one of them is just like super kind but brilliant. Like every one of them is like that. They're so zoned in on what they're doing that they get it. They know what they're looking for, and they communicate it really well. And like, just based on what you're saying, it's really clear that when you went out and you looked for candidates, you were looking, you kind of followed that philosophy. And it, yeah, like again, but the other thing I'll say too is that I can't say enough about this. I said this during the prep call. Your team are like some of the nicest people that I've worked with. They're so kind, and they're so like, they're kind, creative, collaborative people. Like that is the best way to describe them.
Perfect. I'm glad.
Was there anything that you did in particular to like graft them in so that that collaboration kind of was organic, or was it kind of just, that's just how they were and they adapted to the group and it kind of just grew organically?
Yeah, maybe a mix of both. I think we do a good job of onboarding and showing our culture and helping people kind of grow into that mindset. But then also, I've done a lot of referrals and a lot of, you know, other people within our cybersecurity organization have also referred, you know, people that they've worked with before, they know they can collaborate with, and they've, you know, already have that background, which definitely helps the process.
Yeah, that makes a lot
of
sense.
I think definitely referrals. Referrals are definitely a great thing.
Yes, I agree.
And I'm saying that because I definitely referred him in.
Yeah.
And I got no shame on that, but that's because like Tony, mm-hmm. at the time of our organization, because this was over a year and a half now, mm-hmm. ago, you know, we were much smaller, right? And so the reason why I'm asking like you questions about like the different stages is because it's, I feel like there's similarity like with the stages of growth of a company, right? There are certain people that you want to hire early on and that are really cool to work with because they are multifaceted and they can collaborate in a lot of different ways. But then as you grow, like you probably want more specialists, right? As you grow bigger. And so it's an interesting transition, right? To go from your first few initial hires of being multifaceted and being able to cover a lot of ground to growing to, I think you said you have a team of 10 now?
Yeah, right? 10 right now and hiring two more. So 12 total.
Woo! Awesome. And are you getting to a point where it needs to be hierarchical, or like, are they all, it's still pretty flat organization for you?
I think we will eventually get there. But right now, focused on growing kind of each person and a flat organizational structure.
Nice. Cool. Very cool. We got a comment here from Carter. Thanks for chiming in, Carter. He said, if people are willing to refer their friends and past colleagues, I feel like it's a huge indicator that you have a healthy team. And I would agree, but I'm also biased because I'm here at Jupiter One. So, Michael, curious to know what you think on this.
Yeah, for sure. If you want somebody to come work work where you're at, if you want someone to come be a part of you know, where you're at, unless you have something against them, you wouldn't refer them to an unhealthy organization. So 100% that makes sense, and it's a good way of thinking about it. If you're in an organization where people aren't willing to refer anyone or consider, you know, spreading you know, that position to their network, then maybe maybe some internal soul searching on the healthiness of that culture.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Makes sense.
Totally does.
All right. I want to pivot just a little bit, because we've talked a lot about like your team, building your team. And I'm curious to know, because part of what I am on this mission to is to understand just like the dynamic between security teams and non-security teams. So I'm curious to know from your perspective, is there anybody in your organization, like roles, you don't have to say names, but like roles that have been like really good partners to you to ensure the products that you ship are secure? And like, what are the hallmarks of that kind of partner with you?
Yeah, I think in any, you know, product or application specific security role, like your number one partner is going to have to be the engineering teams that work on those products, you know, every day, that write them and that know them inside and out. So I think the hallmark of that relationship, and I'm lucky to have a good relationship with our engineering organizations, is I'm willing to really take initiative and lead the security of those products. So we, you know, may have a new tool or a new policy or a new idea in making a product secure, but having that buy-in from leadership of the teams that's going to implement it is key. Having them, you know, to give feedback on those ideas and help drive the quick implementation of it, I think is vital.
Cool. Would you be willing to indulge me on what a typical conversation like that would look like? Like, is it just you're coming to them and you're saying, hey, we gotta implement this new policy because of XYZ compliance update, whatever, right? Does it usually start from that, or is it, how does that normally happen, I guess is the question.
Yeah, I don't know if I have really any specific examples worth sharing. Just the note I would say there is maybe ideally it's even before that. If you notice a potential issue or a potential concern, just having a collaborative conversation where it's not, all right, I have this policy. It's okay, we have this issue. Like, you know, what are your thoughts? What, you know, would you recommend? So just early collaboration on the process is a lot more effective than going to somebody, you know, with an already decided solution.
Sounds like you like having that dialogue, like that's important for your team to be successful. Like, and then again, to give it back to Ashley, it's communication.
Yeah,
I'm glad you changed your vote then.
Yeah, I'm glad I did too. I was afterwards, I'm going to be kicking myself in the butt if I don't change it and have to have this conversation on Wednesday.
It's all good. I think also, though, the other part of communication is your approach, right? Like, I guess you could umbrella approach under communication, because in order to persuade somebody, you have to like come to in a certain way. But anyways, it sounds to me like instead of what you said, prescribing a solution, you are presenting, hey, this has changed or this is a potential problem. How do you suggest that we handle it in a proactive way? How does it, you know, fit with the priorities and whatnot, which I think is, I think that's cool to see, because I think security has a branding issue where they're just like cracking the whip, right? And they're like, hey, we got to change this, or hey, something's, you know, you are the owner of this, so therefore you have to change this the way I tell you to do it. And it's very more like dictator, or like that's the old way, right? And I think a lot more organizations these days are recognizing that that way doesn't work anymore. It's not a tyrannical kind of leadership style that will work anymore. You definitely have to be a lot more collaborative. I think that's an influence from the evolution of like engineering teams, right? They're not the whole pace. Transition from heroing to being much more collaborative and working together on problems. And I think that I've seen that influence into cybersecurity too, which is cool. Sorry, for I've sure, dominated yeah. and was on my soapbox for a little bit. But I think that's just so cool to see it like live in action. You're here like talking to us about it. And it's just, it's what gives me hope for the future of cybersecurity, honestly, is that there are people like you who are taking that collaborative approach and you're being proactive about what needs to change, but like you're not held so closely to what the solution is. So very cool. Yeah. All right. Let me think. What's the next question? Tony, you had a question you want to ask?
Yeah, I think just to kind of repeat what Ashley was saying, it's great. And I think I know the answer to this question, but it sounds like you said what motivates you to stay in cybersecurity, and it's competition, but like you have this competitive edge. And it's something
that's like, what got him started. Is that actually what is continuing started, to keep you here?
Mm-hmm. No, not necessarily competition. Although cybersecurity does have a interesting aspect there, in that it's always you against, you know, if your defense, it's you against somebody trying to compromise the application, you know, or vice versa if you're on offense. So it does have that atmosphere that I do like, but I think there's other areas of cybersecurity that that also motivate me to stay in it. That we mentioned earlier, actually, about the like evolution of security. I like that it's a growing kind of field. It hasn't been around as long as, you know, maybe some other areas, and we're still learning a lot. We're still you know, maturing a lot, and in the way that we, you know, defend systems, and the way that we better, you know, collaborate with other people in our org, or even recently, just the way that we better, you know, communicate security to executives and stuff like that. So I like a lot of those areas of our field too.
Yeah, you have to be super collaborative. I think there's fun in that.
Yeah, sorry, Tony. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, it's fun. I personally find myself to be somebody who likes to tinker in a bunch of different things. And at certain levels of cybersecurity, you get to do that. You get to explore, and then you get to talk about it. Sometimes you're telling people bad news in a good way, or good news in a bad way. But it's fun. It is a fun place to work. And
good news in a bad way. Never mind. I'm not going to think too much about that. But
don't think too much into it. Don't think too much.
Do you have an example? Okay, I will not read too much into that. Okay, I'm going to quickly, before I lose it, the question that I was going to ask. You've mentioned the Clifton StrengthFinders test multiple times, and I'm curious. One, beyond competition, what were your other like top four strengths? And then, did you also have your team do it? How has that impacted like how you grew your team?
Yeah. I mentioned my number one strength on that assessment was competition. I've done the assessment actually a couple of times. I did it for the first time at a previous organization back in like 2018. that had everybody, take the assessment so that you had like a shared understanding and a shared like kind of conversation topic with everyone. And then I'm like, Gordon, Oregon, it had been a few years since I've done it. So I took it again and got competition as my first strength, and then maximizer, and then arranger is my third. The next, yeah. So competition, maximizer, arranger is my top three. And then, yeah, I've recently, within the last 6 months or yeah, maybe 6 months, have encouraged other people on my team to take the assessment and find out their top strengths. So that kind of guides what areas people can, contribute more to. If you have a top strength of strategic, which some people on my team do, then, maybe you can help more with, planning or, coming up with your strategy for initiatives or, relational. You can help with help collaborate with other teams and stuff like that. So it goes back to having people in roles that fit them well, that they get to do what they do best every day, and they get to focus on their strengths, and it's been cool.
That's awesome. I took the StrengthFinders test probably, I think, 3 years ago now. My top three were empathy, connector, and developer, I think, were the top three. So they were all in like the relational realm, not in the execution realm or not in like any of the other like strategic like groupings that they have. And so I think it's interesting because I feel like for, a good functioning team, you need a balance of a lot of different strengths, sure, right, to pull together as a team. So
I'm going to have to take this test. I don't think I've taken it, or I have, and Ashley remembers my results.
No, I don't think you have either.
So, but I'm going to have to take this test now. I'm curious.
Do it.
I'm
gonna end up and then with. Report back on the next episode.
I will.
Okay. Cool. Okay, one more question, I think, before we head to the game session is, so I read an HBR article, like the differences between being a leader is different from being a manager, right? Mm-hmm. So, and it requires different skill sets to hone. And so I wanted to just open it and ask you, like, what are your thoughts on the differences between the two, and how can people look for opportunities to shore up one side or the other?
All right, yeah. I think maybe manager has like somewhat of a negative connotation sometimes, like compared to leader. I like definitely seen articles or tweets or something that would say like, be a leader, not a boss or a manager. So I think leader has a more, positive connotation. You are leading, by example, and you're, not, overbearing, and you're, doing what's best for the long-term health of your organization. So that's kind of what I think about in the differences there. I was also thinking about this kind of beforehand, thinking about a situation that I had recently where I was mentoring a young manager, just started managing a group, and I observed them like a couple times, like when they were talking to their team, be like, yeah, as your manager, I want you to, do this. I found that very weird. Yeah, mm-hmm. Cracking the whip back to earlier, like, told them, like, you obviously don't, need to remind your team, that you're the manager. They, haven't forgotten that you, I think you should definitely lead, you know, by, for example, and by having maybe the right answers by experience, but then, you know, being willing to listen to differing opinions and being willing to receive feedback and stuff like that. So definitely an interesting area. Hmm.
Definitely.
I think when, like, we talked a little bit about it, and I think, like, it's interesting because I agree with you. Manager always has kind of a weird connotation to it. It's also kind of like a static description. Like, we know what a manager means, but when you hear the phrase leader, it's like this dynamic
thing. Inspirational, aspirational,
inspirational
kind of thing.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, and it's you hope that you're both, because nobody wants to be, well, you'd hope you're one of those. You'd obviously want to be a leader. Everyone wants to be a leader. Like, uh-huh. Being a leader, you know, like, looks cool. You're like, you know, you're the hero.
You're inspirational. You get people, yes, to follow
inspirational.
You.
Inspirational. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I will say,
though, just a manager. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. I mean, in order to be a good manager, you have to be a leader, mm-hmm. because you have to be able to champion ideas and initiatives. Right. Mm-hmm. And get, like, buy-in from your peers and buy-in from leadership. And so there's definitely, like, leadership aspects to being a manager. Whether you're good at it or not is a different story. Right. And that's a skill to be honed. Mm-hmm. But I think, Michael, in you explaining your top three strengths finders, I find it interesting that arranger is up there, because I don't know why, but that shifted kind of my perspective on management, because you are trying to arrange people into a role that they will be happy in doing, succeeding at, right? And then making the necessary changes as you go around. And now, I don't know if that's the right definition of arranger, but that's how I interpreted it in my head, which I thought was just an interesting correlation with, like, your role, how you approach your team, and then also your strengths. So, super cool.
For sure.
I'm just learning so much.
It is. I recently had to describe, like, just my role in, like, you know, one sentence. And in the sentence I chose for that was, I, you know, remove blockers and I help advance people and programs. So not just the advancing programs aspect, but helping advance, you know, people is a key part of the role.
That's great.
So cool. All right, shall we? Are we ready for a little game?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Cool. That's so perfect. I really love that segment. All right, today's game is Would You Rather? So, a little more chill, not as super competitive, though now that I've found out that your mm-hmm. top contender is
more, I'm ready.
Actually have, like, a competitive game. But anyways, I guess we could make this one competitive. We're going to play Would You Rather, and you're going to share your reasoning for why you chose a certain way. And if we get into a debate, I guess if you win the debate and you're able to sway the other person, that's a good thing, right? A winner.
We have a debater, though, here.
Yeah. So this is here perfect then for you, for Tony and Michael to compete. Okay, I think we're good here. This is a good matchup.
All
right.
I might end up just agreeing with Michael, though. Be aware of that.
Perfect. All right, first question. Would you rather have more time or more money? Michael, go first.
Okay. I mean, I definitely think time. Let's see, to have a good reason behind it that Tony can't argue against. time's a very limited resource, and one that you can't, you know, directly control. Mm-hmm. And I don't think many people when they're towards the end of their life, you know, reflect back like, oh, if I just, you know, had more money, really, you know, more time with loved ones and friends, and more time, you know, doing what, you know, they wanted to do or what they did best, is what I think most people would wish they had more of.
Yeah, I agree with Michael. I think Do you want me to get philosophical, or do you want me to get just to the
go
point?
Go for it. Be philosophical.
Time is a finite resource. There is no backwards. There is only forwards, and it is finite, and it is as scalar as it gets. You can't buy it, and you can certainly sell it, but time is that, you can't get it back. That's it. It's truly the most important resource.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we're all in agreement here, because I also agree that time, I would rather have more time than money.
Give us a harder one, Ashley.
Okay. I just wanted to start with an easy one. Would you rather star in a Star Wars film or a Marvel film?
I'll go first on this one. We're talking movies, so I'll answer it from the perspective of what you said. I'd rather be in a Marvel movie. I'll say that. For the people out there who are extreme Star Wars fans, TV series that have come out recently, pretty great. And I won't go further than that. I will end on that. But if you're in a Marvel series, like, who do you get to play? Are you a superhero? Are you a villain? Like, there's kind of fun things there. And there's a lot of different characters you could be that, aren't really fixated on this. And, they're a little, I don't want to say they're more grounded, because nothing in those movies is really ever that grounded. But I would pick Marvel. I think it would be more fun.
Yeah. I was also going to ask, what role do you have? Are you just a bystander, or are we talking the main character in these?
It says star. So okay, whatever star the word star means to you.
I would also have to choose Marvel in that case. Just infinite possibilities with multiverse I think it'd be more fun just subjectively. No clear reason why. Do you have a different answer, Ashley?
Really? No, I'd agree with you. I mean, I think Marvel films are cool. I'm actually going to go watch Ant-Man tomorrow. So, we'll report back on whether that was good or not. I think I enjoy Marvel movies better than I enjoy Star Wars movies.
As of recent.
Across the board. So, what's that?
I think as of recent. There haven't been too many of the Star Wars movies in a while, I feel like, too.
Okay, let me ask you an offshoot question, because this is not part of the Would You Rather. Which Marvel character would you want to be? Since you both chose Marvel films.
Okay, are we talking about, which one? If you're asking me, I'm gonna look too deeply into this question. So
that's okay. Go for it.
Narratively, who do I think has a really good story versus who has cool powers and who's interesting? Like, I think the X-Men have really cool powers. I think they have a cool narrative background, but there's too many of them to pick one. Obviously, Wolverine is cool in some ways, but also kind of a creep because he keeps trying to steal Cyclops' girlfriend.
He's also just tragic.
He is tragic. Yeah. That guy has that. Now, there's a guy who has too much time.
You think that Wolverine's going to show up in Deadpool 3?
Yeah, they already said say he was cast in it.
I don't know. I just saw a picture. Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds are really good friends.
Moneymakers.
But I just saw a picture of them together. That's why it popped in my head. I didn't realize that was actually officially. Obviously, I'm not a hardcore Marvel fan, because if I was, then I would have known that. But whatever. Continue.
I think that the basic answer is going to be Spider-Man. Like, everyone likes Spider-Man. That's a simple answer. That's the equivalent to Batman. If I dig a little deeper, I'm sure there's another character that I could think of.
I think from the tech aspect, And just like power and money. I like Iron Man. If I had to just choose one, maybe also a simple
wow,
answer.
But that is one guy who could have had more time, but doesn't. So I think it's so interesting that you're choosing money now.
You're going to have to tag this with spoilers.
No, not, no. That's fair.
Am I conflating the two? Should I not be doing that?
It's just different answers, you know, different questions.
True. Okay. All right. We'll do another question. Would you want to visit the International Space Station for a week or spend a week in a hotel at the bottom of the ocean?
I will take this one first, and I will go to International Space Station for sure. Just amazing views of Earth and space, and the experience getting there. Probably would be very weird for somebody not an astronaut, but still, I think it could be a lot of fun to be at the space station and experience different, you know, gravitational effects and stuff like that. And the bottom of the ocean just doesn't seem, for some reason, as exciting to me.
I'll debate this one. Right. Because I do agree with you. Like, I think it'd be really cool to go out in outer space, but there is one aspect of going to the bottom of the ocean that is extremely interesting. And it's that very few people have done that. Less people have gone to the bottom of the ocean than have gone to space. And there's something like, there's so much unknown about what's down there, what's been seen. We don't even know all the species of fish that, you know, live in the bottom of the ocean. Or what it looks like down there, you know, that there's something very intriguing about being somebody who's in, and basically, like, here's what I'm saying. You would be in a smaller club by being in the bottom of the ocean club than by being in the outer space club. That's why I picked that one over the other one.
Okay. I mean, I would honestly also choose the bottom of the ocean myself, just because I think there's species of aquatic animals that are yet to be found and discovered. And I think that just would be interesting. And to know that you are just safe in a hotel, like, nobody's going to eat you or anything like that. Like, that's the
underlying... Oh, well, like, there's no guarantee of that because you don't know what's down there.
Well, in my mind for this question, that was, like, the assumptions that I was making. I think that's interesting. I don't know if I would want to go if there's a potential for me to die.
Well, there's definitely a potential for you to die going to space. Oh,
yes, there's a potential for both of these.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, fine. I still would choose the bottom of the ocean, though, because I just think that that's... I mean, unless I'm going for, like, majestic, because I will say, like, the what you would see from the International Space Station would be very majestic. Like, you are looking at, you know, photos that are typically sent down to Earth that we see on a screen, but you get to see it, like, in real life. Like, that'd be really cool.
I'm curious which one's more dangerous. I guess it depends on... I'm kind of curious which one is more dangerous, because it seems like both if something breaks or ruptures, it's like you're done. That's it.
Yep.
No more.
Morbid.
But here's another thing. I'm going to throw one more in there. If you there's more likely you're going to discover something new at the bottom of the ocean. No, I'm wrong. That's not true. I don't know. That's an unfound fact that I was going to say. But it would be cool to discover something new, right? Either way, if you're up there or you're down there, discovery is so cool.
Yes. And being able to live to tell the story about it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I said assumption is we're all going to be safe in these things. It's going to be fine. All right. One last question and then we'll wrap. Final question here. Would you rather know how you will die or know when?
Go for it, Tony.
I'll go with when.
Every other.
Yeah, I'd probably go with when. Huh. I think that I'm trying to think of that's like a big the movie Big Fish. That's what I'm kind of thinking of. If you've seen it, you got really philosophical on us, Ashley. Like you were starting off with, do you want to be in a Marvel movie or a Star Wars movie? and now like if you could choose, if you could find out how you would die versus when you would die, then yeah. If it was how I was going to die and it was like, you're going to die at a Chuck E. Cheese, then I'm going to be like, I'm avoiding Chuck E. Cheese for the rest of my life.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, shouldn't you want to know how you will die? Because then you can just avoid it for as long as you can.
You're assuming you can avoid it.
Yeah.
This is true.
Mm-hmm. Based on your question, it sounds like it's unavoidable.
This is true. I mean, you are going to... We are all going to die at some point. That is just the fact of life. It's just which information would be more valuable to you.
I'd be super reckless knowledge. If I knew when. I'd be like, oh, yeah, you know when. Just oh, man.
Yeah. I would.
Sorry, Michael, would you also when. Said when? Okay.
Yeah, I would pick when for sure.
And then you know how to live out the rest of your days. Wow.
Yeah.
Well.
This has been
insightful. Uh-huh. I've learned something new about Tony, and I've learned much more about you, Michael. So thank you so much. This has been an excellent episode. I've loved just kind of digging into how you manage your team and your strengths and how that all plays into scaling a big team, and also just how you take care of your team, which I love hearing about. So thank you so much again for being on our show, and... I think it's time for us, for Tony and I, to wrap it up.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right, everybody. Thank you again so much for joining Tony and I and this journey with Michael Roberts from Abbott. It has been excellent to just learn about product security and learning how to build a team. I think those are both things that... Tony and I have not really interacted with much. So it's just great to learn. With that said, I think our next episode is going to be in 2 weeks. So definitely stay tuned on YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitch, whichever channel that you're paying attention to. Same time, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. Tune in 2 weeks, Wednesday, March 1st. We will see you then. Take care.